I'm Christos Gage.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gay.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan.
And this is Victor Dandridge, and you're listening to Thinking Outside of the Long Box.
Got to believe, but I feel asleep. Way too excited, been waiting all week. And everyone's here, so let's pack up the van. It's not enough room, so we Tetris the bags.
We're on the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and I'm very happy to be with you. With me, as always, is my co-host down in the Principality and Fairy Kingdom, known as Louisiana, is our good friend Mike. How you doing there, Mike?
Bonjour. I'm doing fine.
I'm glad that's not an Algerian accent. And up in Boston is our good friend Joshua in LT. Josh, how you doing today?
I am doing great, just warming my feet by the heat of my cute puppy.
Now, you're about to get another storm up there, isn't that right?
That's what they're telling me, but I have chosen to disbelieve.
Oh, that'll protect you.
Yeah.
Tommy, you're in Boston. What do you think?
I think we're going to get a storm.
Oh,
I think we're due for one.
I think Tom, LT, has failed his will save. Josh, congratulations.
Thank you. I'll walk right through that snowstorm.
Yeah. Storm. I am the storm.
There's a secret door behind it. I know it.
Yeah, right there. Okay, today we're going to be talking about some of our favorite supporting characters in comic books. These are non-superheroes and non-powered characters that show up in our comic books that kind of are used to move the story along. A good example might be J. Jonah Jameson or maybe Gwen Stacy. Of course, Gwen Stacy's superpowered now, but we're ignoring that the way Josh is ignoring the upcoming snowstorm. We've all talked about how these characters are integral to the plot, and some of them are almost as memorable as superheroes. So we're all just going to go around and talk about some of our favorites. Mikey, why don't you start us up?
My favorite supporting cast character is a non-human. He goes by the name of either Pizza Dog, a.k.a. Arrow, a.k.a. Lucky. To give you a little bit of background, if you haven't read Matt Fraction's series called Hawkeye, I highly recommend it. In the first issue, Hawkeye, a.k.a. Clint Barton, it's all about what he does on his off-duty when he's not being an Avenger. So he's going into a store. He's eating some pizza. He sees a dog, throws the dog a slice of pizza. That's how he gets the name Pizza Dog. Ends up the dog eating the pizza belongs to the Tracksuit Mafia, which are a group of Eastern Europeans who are very hilarious in the comic themselves. They end up getting into a fight with Hawkeye, and right as one of the Tracksuit Mafia guys is about to shoot Hawkeye, Pizza Dog, remembering that this guy gave him a pizza, jumps up and saves him, and in the process gets severely wounded. So the rest of the issue is Hawkeye trying to bring Arrow, Lucky, Pizza Dog, whatever you want to call him, to the hospital, making sure that this dog does not die. The best part about this dog is that his view of the world is depicted in the comic itself. In issue number 11 of Hawkeye, it's one of the best comics, single issue comics, that I've ever read, and I recommend it to everybody because it's told from the point of view of the dog. So everything is done in icons because the dog doesn't process language, and the only time you do hear words is only words that the dog understands. It is a beautiful story, and you don't even have to read any of the other issues. Just pick that one up, and if you don't like it, then you're dead inside.
We don't know what to do with you if you don't love it. The podcast has gotten too big, $1 bet thing. Among my friends, Mike and everybody, we do this thing where if there's something we really like, we tell people to pick up the first one, and if they don't like it, we'll give them their money back. I'm afraid we can't do that with all the listeners because we just have a few too many now. But this is one that I would actually say kind of fits in that category.
I would make the bet with the four of you.
All right. Well, I'm going to pick up a couple issues, and I'll see how I like it. Joshua, who's one of your favorite supporting characters?
I'm going with Moira MacTaggert. I mean, integral to this X-Men storyline for so long. You know, she's a Nobel Prize winner. She's the, you know, she's an expert on genetic mutation. She's the silent partner who helps Xavier start the School for Gifted Youngsters. She's a co-creator of Cerebro. And she, you know, she's just been there through the whole time. She's had relationships with Charles, and, you know, she's had a son who had her own problem, Proteus, who she tried to save, and then later on tries to save Xavier's son, Legion. You know, she takes Cable in when he first arrives and teaches him all the ways of our world. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, she's also the only non-mutant who was ever a leader of the of an X-Men team.
Yeah, I'd have to say you're right. Not counting the Uncanny Avengers or anything like that, but yeah.
So she is the team leader of the Mural Island X-Men team, and she goes on and is integral into the whole story for the Legacy Virus and all the crossovers that were included there. So she's just always been there for the X-Men, in and out, the good and the bad, and I think she's just a great supporting character and a great female character.
Oh, that's a great choice. I don't really think too much about Moira MacTaggert. She's kind of been under my radar, but I do remember the character, of course. Tommy, what do you have for us?
My choice is Happy Hogan. He came on the scene in 1963 as a supporting character for Iron Man Tony Stark. Tony Stark had gotten injured stock car racing and needed a chauffeur, and Happy Hogan fit the bill. He was there to kind of act as a bodyguard and a chauffeur for a while. He married Tony Stark's secretary, Pepper Potts, later divorced her, later remarried her. And there's just a really great story in Marvel's Civil War where Happy Hogan is fighting Taskmaster, protecting Tony Stark. And he eventually, Taskmaster and him basically fall over several stories fall. Happy Hogan ended up in the hospital as a vegetable, and Pepper Potts can kind of, it's a little wishy-washy whether he died on his own or whether Pepper Potts convinced Tony Stark to end his life mercifully. I think it was a really great story where it kind of showed patient rights, and that's something that you don't really see a lot in comic books, where somebody's making a conscious choice to end a person's life because it's not the life they would want to lead, not wanting to be a vegetable and being like that. And I think Happy was just a very good, down-to-earth character. He was a little rough and tumble at times, but never stand in the big leagues with the superheroes. He did don the Iron Man armor occasionally to kind of buy Tony Stark some time or to bring the armor to Tony. But other than that, he was just a great character that kind of weaved in and out of the Iron Man series.
All right. Well, that brings me to my favorite character of all time. I always joked around with the wife saying that if I was in the Harry Potter universe, my Patronus would be Harvey Bullock. Because I love Harvey Bullock. He was created in 1974, and in the Detective Comics number 441, Archie Goodwin and Howard Chaklin. I'm not sure how to say that, but that's
Chaykin.
Thank you, Howard Chaykin, are the creators. He was first kind of a foil, working against Batman in a lot of ways. He was kind of a corrupt cop, like JLT was saying, kind of rough and tumble. Very often portrayed as either lazy or maybe even corrupt. Later on, I wouldn't say he gets retconned, but it turns out that all the stuff that he had been doing was mostly out of loyalty to Jim Gordon and protecting Jim Gordon. He becomes this kind of stoic everyman detective who is just really out to protect Gotham. No nonsense, not afraid to bend the rules or even break some rules and laws to get the job done. Just a terrific character, really fun to read. I liked him in everything he's appeared in. I even like him in the Gotham TV series. What do you guys think about how Bullock's been on the TV show?
I think he's been the best part of the Gotham TV show, especially in the first season. He was the only part I really enjoyed watching.
I thought he was really believable in the Gotham show.
I do not enjoy Gotham.
All right, well, that's one dissenting opinion out of many, and you suck.
That's fair.
I love Gotham, and I do really enjoy I don't love Gotham, but I really like Gotham. I want to love Gotham, but I just really like Gotham. And I still think Harvey Bullock was part of the best, a big part of why I enjoy it. When they're standing over a body he's eating a Danish and just not giving a crap. That just kind of reeks of that old Batman style, film noir-esque comic books that I love so much. And the actor and everything, just a terrific character. I'm a huge fan.
I just keep waiting for Blade to cut his hand off randomly in a scene.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
All right, so now we're going to do our regular segments, which is front of the long box, back of the long box. Mikey, what do you got in the front of the long box?
I'm going to recommend a series that has been around for quite a while. If you are a role player of any kind, you should check out Knights of the Dinner Table.
Ooh, good pick.
Classic.
You might be daunted by just jumping into any storyline. Don't worry about it. You can pick it up at any... Usually it's not only located at comic book stores, but you can also find it at gaming shops a lot of the time. And you can just start picking up and reading. If you have ever done any kind of role-playing games, you're going to relate to these characters and what they're going through. The four main characters plus the DM, they're hilarious. Plus they've been out for so long, they've got a whole group of peripheral characters that occasionally get their own storylines, like the Black Hand. Can't recommend it enough. Very funny, easy to jump in or out of. And if you do like it and you want to pick up the back issues, you can go to kenzerco.com, and they sell the back issues in bundles called Bundles of Trouble, which is a great way to pick up old back issues on the cheap.
Yeah, that was a terrific one. It really got me back into role-playing games after I got out of the military. I had kind of put it aside for a long time, and I started reading Knights of the Dinner Table and remembering how much I enjoyed it. And, of course, one of the most classic bits ever from Knights of the Dinner Table is the attack of the gazebo.
Yes, that's right. I don't want to spoil it if you read that episode, but when the DM describes the gazebo, they start freaking out about, oh, my God, it's a gazebo. How many hit dice do those things have? they've changed the Knights of the Dinner Table into a magazine now. So half of it is the comic book itself, and the other half are articles about role-playing games. And they even have Starf Quest in the back of the magazine.
Well, that's great. Tommy, what do you got at the old back of the long box today?
I've got a story from 2004 called We Three, by Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly. This is a story of three pets that have kind of been absconded from their homes, and the military has gotten a hold of them and turned them into weapons. They have these kind of exosuits of armor with different weapons. The dog has guns and surface-to-air missiles. The cat character has dozens and dozens of sharp flechettes, and the bunny rabbit character kind of poops out mines. This story is not really one for children, small children. I would recommend it more for high schoolers and above, because it does have a lot of graphic violence in it. But it is a great story. It's kind of like The Amazing Journey, only if those animals were weaponized and trying to get to a local city to find their owners. And they're hunted by the military because, well, they've gone rogue. They were about to be destroyed, and they decided to go for freedom instead. And it was a really great book. It's about 100 pages long. You can pick it up in trade, or you can pick it up on Comixology or Amazon or wherever you normally purchase your DC-type comics. It was originally put out by Vertigo, in the Vertigo line of DC Comics, and it was just a really great story. The art is fantastic, and it has one of the most poignant scenes in comicdom that I've seen, in which the dog, the three of the animals have just blown up a train to get away from the military, basically to cause a scene, cause some ruckus, and one of the train operators is lying cut in half in a river, and the dog pulls the guy to the bank of the river and just says, "Good dog, I'm saving man. Good dog." And it's just really kind of a great piece, because it just goes to show that these animals, while they have been bastardized by the military, they can speak, but they still don't have the capability to have a good concept of everything that's going on around them, into interacting with the human world. And it was just a really great storyline, and it's also a really relevant kind of story in today's world, where the military does try to weaponize a lot of things in nature.
Well, that sounds like a great read, but it also sounds like it would make me cry horribly.
Oh yeah, it'll make you cry, Tom. It'll make you cry. It's Grant Morrison again. If I've ranted and raved about how Grant Morrison's one of my favorite writers. Sometimes I get him, sometimes I don't. This is one of the series I was like, okay, I get this one.
Well, I cry reading comic books, like Boehner at his own funeral sometimes. So my wife will come walking in like, "What the hell happened?" And I'm like, this is the worst this issue, this game. And like, she tells me to shut the hell up. Maybe I don't want to read that one without maybe having a big glass of water so I don't dehydrate. My comic book is, I like to talk about socially relevant issues. This one's kind of a fun one, only because it's socially relevant in kind of an odd way. We're going back to Marvel Team-Up number 8. This is a Spider-Man one, and this was published in 1972. So Marvel Team-Up, Spider-Man and the Cat. The Cat is this iteration of Hellcat, and they're fighting the Man-Killer. The thing I like about this comic book is Hellcat attacks Spider-Man, as superheroes often do, just to prove a point. She proves a point that she's just as good a fighter as any man out there. This entire issue has a male versus female undertone and a woman's rights theme going through it. The Man Killer herself hates all men, is determined to kill all men, or, well, at least most men. The Cat is, of course, trying to stop her, and she attacks Spider-Man to make him listen to her long enough for them to team up together. If you like a little bit of interesting feminist literature in your comic book, this might be something you want to pick up. And of course, I really like the character Patsy Walker, as we've talked about many times, whether or not she's Cat, Hellcat, or just Patsy Walker.
That sounds like a great old book, Tom. Somebody who really cared about you must have gotten that for you.
That's right. I should mention that my good friend LT got me that one, because he knows I'm collecting all these old Patsy Walker ones. Now I guess we can talk about our plugs. The first thing we like to plug every week, of course, is our great house band. Thank you once again to Kirby Crackle, who has talked to us now a couple times on Twitter about being our unofficial house band. We really do appreciate all the music. Mike, what played us in this time?
Going Home.
Oh, I love Going Home. It's one of my favorite songs to play when I'm going to a con. And I guess we'll have to surprise ourselves with what song plays us out.
It will be a surprise to me.
All right. Do we have anything to plug? I have one thing. Anybody else?
I would like to plug IanLino.com, purveyor of fine, fine T-shirts. That's IanLino.com.
I swear he's giving you a kickback or something.
Love his shirts, man.
Hey, he uses American Apparel shirts. They're really super comfortable and super soft. My wife and my daughter love the shirts that I got them at the last con.
Yeah, I'm actually a huge fan also. How about you, Josh? Anything to...
Well, Knights of the Dinner Table came up, so I'm going to go ahead and plug Order of the Stick.
Seriously, people, if you're a gamer and you've not read Order of the Stick, get on this and get on it today. It's Giants on the Playground is the website, or just search your little heart out for Order of the Stick. Start from the beginning, and you will not regret it.
I'm a huge fan of Order of the Stick also. That's a great one. Mikey, how about you?
Well, first of all, on Order of the Stick, I am a sexy, shoeless god of death. But I would like to plug one of our friends' podcasts, Black Nerd Power. Richard Douglas Jones is the host of it. And on the latest episode, episode number 89, if you're looking for it on iTunes, they have an interview with David Walker, who not only is he the current writer for Cyborg, but he's also the current writer for Power Man and Iron Fist, which I talked about a few episodes ago, recommending it to everybody. So if you're interested in Power Man and Iron Fist, it's a great interview. Again, it's Black Nerd Power, episode number 89.
It's funny that you should mention our good friend Richard Jones. I'll be sitting on a panel with him. I better tell him. We're sitting on a panel for Mid-South Comic-Con. I just found out I'm on this panel this weekend, but I'm sitting on it with Richard Jones on Saturday. We'll be talking about African-Americans in comic books and early representations of African-American characters in comic books. And we'll be doing that together on Saturday, and on Sunday we'll be doing one on superhero bracketology, putting some superheroes against each other, kind of a big superhero smackdown. So that's the Mid-South Comic-Con going on this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I guess today's Friday, so already started, so you probably don't have a lot of time to get there, guys. And Sunday there'll be another one on podcasting, which I've been invited to do, but I'll have to decline that one. It's too late in the day. So that's my little plug for the day. Anyone have anything else?
Well, you mentioned somebody tweeting us. What is our Twitter account?
Our Twitter account? Well, that's a terrific, terrific question. And I'm going to walk it over to my Twitter account right now. Josh, have you been on our Twitter?
Yeah. I am. I follow Twitter. I tweet. I have tweeted.
Okay.
Are we the long box guys?
We are. We are outside the long box at the long box guys.
Okay. I don't know anything about Twitter, so I believe you.
Yeah. Well, at the long box guys is fine. And we are www.outsidethelongbox.com if you want to see us on the old interwebs.
Oh, we can do it that way, too. Fancy, fancy.
Oh, yeah.
We are all fancy.
It's like we're all connected by a slender, slender thread.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be our episode for this week. Thanks to everybody from beautiful Memphis.
Wait,
there's nothing else? What else?
We're about to have an interview before we sign off.
Oh, an interview this week. That's great.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to Andy B. Childress, the creator of Bubba World Comics. I could go into all the different things that he creates because he's very prolific, but I think it's best to let him do the talking himself. So this is Andy B. Childress.
I'm Andy B. Childress from Bubba World Comics, and I am thinking outside the long box.
So we are here at Pensacon 2016, and this is a creator, not only a writer, but also an artist for his own label. Could you tell us all about your label?
Yeah, Bubba World Comics. I started off with one comic strip, and then I added a couple of titles, and eventually I just figured I needed an umbrella name, and I'm the Uncle Bubba of my family, and they say I live in my own world, so Bubba World became the obvious choice.
Now, this is a traditional comic strip kind of comic, and you've got multiple different strips within the strip. What are some of the strips that you do?
We got Mississippi Swamp Dragons, which, as the title suggests, is about a psychotic chicken in a floppy ear hat and a pessimistic clown. Then we have Dawn of Time, which is redneck cavemen. Quick Appliance Repair, which is about two idiot brothers working for their dad in the appliance business, which was like me growing up. Then there's Going Batty, which is a mad scientist and his critters in his castle, which is now in a dirigible lost in the Bermuda Triangle. Captain Geezer of the Space Time Patrol, whose arch nemesis travels in a porta potty time machine, which is very cramped. For Doctor Who fans out there, it's not bigger on the inside. And then everybody loves Space Rednecks, which is Houston, Mississippi, with a space program. And then there's also a seventh one I do from time to time, which is Zach the Zombie Hunter, which is a humor comic. And that's the seven main humor comics that I do.
Now, I was reading your book last night. I am a big fan of Quick Appliance Repair. Those two idiot brothers are my favorite of your characters. How can people find your work?
BubbaWorldComics.com. You go BubbaWorldComics.com. That's my website. I have recently retooled the whole website. It is now gag comics, just one-shot gag comics with no regular characters, but you can buy my books. There's links to get my books there. I have a collection book now, and I'm coming out with another collection in 3 months, but also after that, each of the titles I just named will become their own books. Like, 1 month, I may release Space Rednecks as a 50 or so page book with just a full story. And then a few months later, I may release Quick Appliance Repair. But you follow the website, you'll know when the books come out.
And do you have a YouTube channel?
I do, and I have a big furry horned monster puppet that I use on the YouTube channel, Roscoe P. Kramer. He does a lot of interviews. He's interviewed a couple of Doctor Who's already, people like that, some cartoonists and whatnot. We do funny videos. I've turned it over to the puppets. I don't know if that's worse on my mentality that I'm willing to turn a YouTube channel over to puppets or the fact that videos are going back up. You know, so, but that, yeah, I use that to promote my website, and I have fun. There's no telling what you'll find on that YouTube.
Now, you were a comic collector back in the day. Who's your favorite comic book character that you did not create?
Oh, that's a hard question. I'm going to go with Captain Marvel Shazam. Because I will still occasionally buy him in a graphic novel. It's just something about him I always liked. The Hulk was always a big favorite. I liked the Superman, but Captain Marvel, for some reason, I just felt more with him.
And is there a horrible stereotype out there that either you think is just so bad it becomes good, or that is you just... the trope is endearing to you?
It's a comic, and you want to be funny, but at the same time, who's gonna get mad at you making fun of them when you're not actually making fun of them? So I make fun of myself more.
So your favorite stereotype is the redneck stereotype.
That's exactly it, because I'm a big old redneck. In fact, the Quick Appliance Repair that you like so much, one of the brothers is my personality. One of the brothers' personality is my older brother personality. I drew them different from us, but they are us. It's so scary how many of the strips throughout the years are took from reality. Yeah, and some of them are in previous books, but I have archives of all the stuff that you can find on the website, full archives of all six of those titles.
Now, you are also a big Doctor Who fan. Now, let's combine that with the redneck. So you might be a redneck Time Lord if...
You might be a redneck Time Lord if you have a pickup bed on your TARDIS, or if your TARDIS is sitting on cinder blocks, or if your TARDIS has a garbage bag over the window, or if you think a wormhole is a place to get fishing bait. All these are ones I have used. If you regenerate and have less teeth than you started with, you might be a redneck Time Lord. Yes, I've been doing these for a while, and I've got a bunch I need to write and draw.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, man.
All right, that was a terrific interview. I remember meeting him. His comic books were really funny. So thank you very much for that interview. And from beautiful Memphis, this is Tom Strange.
Mike Manning.
Tom Boucher.
And certainly a special guest, Josh.
You are a very, very special little guest. And remember what we always say. What is it that we always say?
Don't diss what you hate.
There you go. Say it for me, Tommy. Say it.
Diss what you hate, promote what you love.
There you go. Don't diss what you hate, promote what you love, guys. Go out there and be a fan.
Wide eyes, so say if you want to, you can call me Uatu.